You are listening to the Action Figure Blues podcast, episode number 33, brought to you by actionfigureblues.com. I'm Scott, and with me tonight are...
Ben.
And John.
We're three guys who collect action figures, statues, and other items from the worlds of comics and pop culture, and we like them so much we made this podcast just to talk about them. This episode, after our regular features, we'll be talking with Philip Reed of BattleGrip.com about Transformers and his upcoming book, Transforming Collections. Gentlemen, here we are on our 33rd anniversary. I did do a bit of research before we started, and the modern 33rd anniversary gift is Amethyst. I failed to provide any today, but happy Amethyst anniversary.
Cool. We could have swapped comic books.
Well, I did think that was a bit appropriate because there was a comic book link there, but there you go. We can at least mention it, and it's better than, you know, any comic books that are being published at the moment, so... There you go.
Well, that's right.
So, Ben, what have you been up to in the last week or so?
I noticed after the last couple of weeks, I mentioned that I've had very unexciting weeks, but I turned that around this week and I had a very exciting week. Through the magic of that wonderful narcissistic self-love engine Facebook, I had a pretty cool encounter. My father was Dutch and an Australian immigrant, and after he passed away many years ago, I lost touch with family in Holland. And about a few weeks ago, I was actually contacted by a cousin that I have not seen for 30 years, and he was coming out to Australia to visit and contacted me about sort of catching up. And, yeah, we did just that during the week, so I got to spend a couple of days with him and sort of catching up and talking family and
wow,
talking about family trees and things like that. So, yeah, it was pretty exciting.
Wow, that is very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Extremely. Yeah.
It was actually quite interesting in that both of us have been trying to map our family trees. And as it turns out, he had a lot more information than I did, but after my grandfather passed away, my aunt actually gave me a lot of the family photos, sent them from Holland. And so he had a lot more information than I did, but I actually had the photos. And based on some scraps of information that were written on the back of them, he was able to tell me who they were. And consequently, he now has photos of the people from the family tree. So,
wow.
Yeah, I scanned them all in and sent them to him. So, yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, well,
that's awesome.
Patch a fat bit of the family tree together.
Yeah, yeah. We've sort of gone back to sort of the late 1600s. So, yeah.
Facebook can be interesting for things like that. Like, it keeps suggesting to me as a friend, my biological half-brother who doesn't know that I exist. That's fun. So, you know, the good and slightly weird of Facebook.
Yes.
What about you, John? Any relatives on Facebook that don't know you exist?
Oh, probably.
And what else is happening for you this week?
I actually had a week where I took more things off my to-do list than I put on. So I felt pretty good because, I work in the medical industry and here in the States, that means a ton of paperwork. You know, we've got instructions on how to do everything and you change something, it takes five people to approve it. So, to be able to take things off my list, I felt pretty good.
That's very groovy.
Excellent. And did you manage to get from A to B without any car issues?
Yeah, I don't like to mention it because I'm afraid of jinxing myself.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, lucky I did that.
Yeah, I have to say, having looked at the Enhanced podcast from last week, that was a spectacular tire blowout.
Indeed.
And you did a great job enhancing the podcast. I have to say that because I actually took the time and downloaded it at work and watched it on the little iTunes thing, and it looked pretty good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to I don't use podcasts that way, so I never kind of know if people get things out of it. But when we don't do it, we hear about it. So that's why we do it.
Yeah, I like it. So what have you been up to, Scott? You've had a couple of really busy weeks at work, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been on holidays for the last 2 weeks. But I have been spending this week switching banks because our home loan stuff for our house that we are about to start building is with a different bank. So all that kind of just tedious stuff of moving direct debits and, salary transfers and everything over. So it actually was good timing having the holidays to do it, because I just don't know how I would get it all done. But it's amazing how different organizations can make things so much more easy or difficult to do the same thing. You know, I don't know if the States is the same, John, but here, most things that you have to pay, you can get direct debited from your bank account.
Yeah.
Okay. So
we can do that here.
Yeah. So your insurance, your everything. And, you know, some places you can ring, you do it over the phone, it's done in 5 minutes. I want to change my bank details. Yep. No worries. Other places it's like, oh, well, you'll have to come into the branch for that, but only on a Tuesday between 3 and 3:01, and fill out paperwork. And you must be wearing blue. And if it's a day that has a Y in it, then we probably won't accept it. It's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's been great fun. You've got to love the banking system.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. I've worked in project management for a while now, and a lot of the projects are software related. And with my bank, I have 4 different accounts, including mortgage and credit card and that sort of thing. Yep. And of those 4 accounts, my name is actually spelt 3 different ways.
Oh!
One of them, I am Ben. One of them, I am Benjamin. And on the 3rd different one, I actually have an extra letter in my surname. And I've spoken to them a number of times to try and get them aligned. And from what I understand, their systems are so complicated and running different versions of software, et cetera, that they can't actually trace where they all connect anymore. So they just...
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's
they just
awesome.
Can't update them.
I suppose that'd make it harder for someone to completely steal your identity.
Well, that's right. Hopefully they'll only get 1 to 2 accounts.
Wonderful. Well, we've got a fun show coming up, bit different this week, because we do have a guest, Philip Reed, who's going to be talking to us about his book Transforming Collections, which will be coming out shortly, which means that we will not do Toy of the Week, but we do have the rest of our features coming up. And we're going to get started with one now, which is Articulated News.
It is a world transformed, where things are not what they seem. It is the world of the Transformers.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. The Transformers,
robots in disguise.
Transformers, more than meets the eye.
The Transformers from Marvel Comics.
All right, it's time for a bit of news. This is Articulated News, where we're going to discuss the latest events and announcements out there in the toy and collectibles world. We never try to be a comprehensive toy news service. We're just talking about the things that have captured our imagination or attention or horror this week. And speaking of a bit of horror, I've got our first piece of news, and that is one of the New York Comic Con exclusives from DC Collectibles that has been announced, which is an Aardman Batman action figure designed by Rich Weber and Phil Ramirez. So this is, you know, the Aardman stuff, which, you know, it's based on the Wallace and Gromit
claymation
stuff, which looks, you know, which I love, Wallace and Gromit. But I'm not so sure what I think about the Batman version.
Yeah, it's not working for me at all.
No.
No.
There's 2 thoughts that come to mind for me. One, I thought it was Sergio Argonis. Because it had that Mad Magazine kind of look to it.
Yes.
And 2, I thought sex toy.
Al, very pointy sex toy. What kind of sex toys do you use? Grief. This is going a completely different direction from where I thought it was.
I think what what's interesting about this piece is everybody loves Aardman, and if I had to sort of conjure an image of what an Aardman Batman would look like, this is not it.
No, not even close.
I just think it's dumb. I think that there are so many things that DC Direct / Collectibles have started that they could persevere with instead of continuing to do stuff like this. You know, if it's not Blamoids or, you know, uniforms, you know, or whatever, it's something like this, when really, you know, like, why didn't they keep going with Minimates? Why are we getting crappy New 52 CoverGirl statues now? I don't know.
Is this the start of a new series, or is it just a one-off, or?
No idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting concept, and I just think the execution hasn't worked. I mean, if we would eventually go on to see an entire Justice League done in Aardman sort of claymation style, if I was just reading text-based news, I'd think that was pretty exciting. But having seen the first figure, I'm really not impressed at all. And so sort of I don't have much faith for any future figures.
No, definitely not my cup of tea. And speaking of things that haven't been my cup of tea so far, we have the solicits for the third series of the Walking Dead TV figures. And this is a set of five that has Michonne, it has Merle, it has a autopsy zombie, whatever that is, and then it has Michonne's pet zombies. And it's interesting because these solicits actually don't look bad, but we know that the execution of these is never, you know, quite what you would hope. So it'll be interesting to see how these turn out, but...
Well, I think this is the classic example of the prototype image that they're putting out there is a nicely tooled two-up or something like that, because the first two series have sucked, so I don't expect them to sort of suddenly turn things around. But what's actually interesting, I think, is that we're actually going to look at what Michonne looks like before the show's even started.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, I guess, promo pics and that sort of thing, so it's not completely spoiled.
Well, she was in the last episode.
Oh, covered by a cloak.
Well, the cloak is included.
Yeah, but she had the two pet zombies with her, too, so.
Yeah. I think it's weird that the pet zombies come with the cut-off arms.
Like, I'm guessing there'll be a flashback as to how that happened probably during the season.
Yeah, sure, but I just don't kind of, like, why? It's not like they carry them around with them, do they?
Oh, as in why the figures come with the
arms?
Yeah,
why do the figures come with... I mean, you know, their arms are detached, but still they seem to...
Yeah, yeah.
With the accessories.
Because they're well-armed figures.
Oh, terrible! But the head sculpt on that Michonne looks so good, I almost wonder if it's actually a photo.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. None of the figures have looked good so far, but anyway, I think we've disparaged this line enough. I just had to mention that these are coming out. John, what exciting things have you got to share with us?
Well, the first thing I've got to share is that Sideshow had to put up a pre-order this week for a Vampirella statue. And this one is based on some classic art, which I know thanks to you guys, but it's interesting. It's like Vampirella in a surprised look, and she's standing on a Phoenix Force logo, it looks like. I saw this, and I just – she looks a little cross-eyed like Gertie painted her. So I don't know. This just doesn't look good. I think our friend Mark Newman, he definitely did a better job on the Vampirella statue. He did.
I think that sometimes great art doesn't necessarily translate to a great 3D piece. And I think that partly this is an example of that, because in the original art, she's looks surprised and it's face on, you know, but with this, she either looks like she's surprised while skiing or surprised while taking a dump. Neither of which I really need to own a 3D version of.
Yeah, not for $250, that's for sure. And because I always think if I'm going to buy a Vampirella statue, I'd want it to be the sexy, you know, kind of look to it. And this is not that.
No, not at all. No.
You could pick this one up, Scott, and put it next to your CoverGirl's Batgirl figure.
Which I will never own.
That's literally the same pose.
Oh, yeah. But you can't really fault Adam Hughes for this because, Ishikan, it's his art. I don't know. I think
this is kind of similar to the black and white Joker statue in that I don't think it captures that image from the right direction.
That's right. You're right.
And none of the pictures show it from that particular direction either.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose if you're a mad Vampirella fan, then awesome. But if you only, wanted one Vampirella piece, I don't know how you could go past the Mark Newman premium format figure for this. This is from Dynamite Entertainment. Is this Adam Hughes one? So interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good word. Now we'll move on to something. We'll move on to something a little better.
Okay.
Hasbro teased this week, and they're going to announce probably what the line's going to be at New York Comic Con, G.I. Joe Creos. And this is those little Lego figures that Hasbro has, the proprietary, it's their proprietary version of a Lego figure. So folks, it was interesting because some of the G.I. Joe folks are excited. Some of them aren't. I think for the most part, the Lego fans and everybody will be snatching these up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, if you're a G.I. Joe fan, it's just another sort of, not a property, but another style to collect. So at least it gives you an additional option. And I mean, if you're a diehard G.I. Joe fan, you've still got the classic three-quarter.
Yeah, they kind of did a little thing a while back called Built to Rule, I think was the name of it, where they combined 3 3/4 G.I. Joe figures with building block toys. And you could snap blocks onto the figures, and it just didn't go anywhere. And that kind of left a bad taste in some G.I. Joe collectors' mouths for building block toys, I think. And But what I had said on Twitter the other day is that, if this gets kids interested in G.I. Joe, I think for the brand in the long term, it'll be a really good thing. So,
yeah, I think that's something we do forget is the age that a lot of these items are aimed at.
Yeah, for sure.
Whenever I hear Creo, because it's not a brand that I'm familiar with here, I actually think of a cookie. I don't know if it's like Oreo, too close to Oreo or whatever, but it makes me hungry.
Yeah, it's just another variation of Lego that Hasbro owns them.
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, any news from you?
Yeah, some time ago there was some news regarding a company called, now I'm not sure exactly how they pronounce it, it could be just FX or EFX, it's a lowercase e, capital F, lowercase x, so FX. It's a company that's doing replicas, and they announced that they were going to be doing Avengers replicas, and it's taken them some time to get moving. I'm sure that news was 6 months ago, if not more, even before the movie.
Yeah.
They were talking about doing replicas of Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, and of course Captain America's shield, etc. And I mean, a little bit sort of apprehensive, their website. A lot of their website is really outdated, so you can't really get any information from there. They've been soliciting some pictures of some really good-looking stuff, such as Mjolnir from the Avengers as opposed to from the first Thor film, because the hammers differ slightly. And it looks good. Still no prices, though. The website says, the upcoming movie, The Avengers. So it gives you an idea of how long it's been since they've updated their website. So you kind of get really nervous because I'm really interested in this sort of thing, and I would still love to own a really well-done Captain America shield or obviously a Mjolnir So I'll just have to wait and see. And I think even when these items come out, I'll wait till some reviews start hitting the net before I would even consider it. But in the past, these kind of items have gone for really, really big dollars. So I don't sort of hold out any hope that we'll see any kind of affordable line of movie props. But one of the things they are actually doing, which I thought was quite clever, is they are actually doing replicas of the Captain America playing cards that Agent Phil Coulson was waving around in the Avengers film. And I don't know whether it's a bit kind of morbid, but they're doing two versions of the cards. One is the Virgin cards, so look as if they've just been collected, and then there's another set that actually has blood splatter on them because, you know, spoiler alert, he had them in his pocket when he was killed by Loki.
No, he didn't.
Didn't he?
No, don't you remember the bit in the, after, you know, Fury slaps them on the table and motivates them all to say, you know, he did this for you, whatever.
He had the blood on his hands.
And then Maria Hill says they weren't there, they were in his locker.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
Yeah, so he manipulated them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he manipulated.
Double spoiler alert.
Yeah, he manipulated me too then. So now, anyway.
I was listening to another podcast this week, and they actually had received the posters, the Captain America posters, already.
Okay.
And they were saying they're odd sizes because they're replicas. They're like 26 by 36 and 22 by 36.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you almost either have to have a custom frame or customize your mount to frame them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of strange.
I probably wouldn't be enthusiastic for the posters, but the cards seem like a bit of a novel idea because I noticed in the movie that what brief glimpses you did get, there was a couple of Jack Kirby in there.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah.
And something else.
Yeah. This comes from the borderline red card, a WTF type situation, and... that is the news that I don't even know where to start. Basically, DC Entertainment has banded together with Kia, yes, Kia Motors, to basically do a series of vehicles that are customized with various DC characters. To give you an example, at the New York Comic Con, they'll unveil a Batman-themed Kia Optima. And, I mean, look, there is a good side to this. They are actually auctioning these vehicles and the money is going to charity. But, oh, gee, where do you... I don't know where to go with this. I mean, you know, is anybody particularly interested in having, like, a... I don't know. You know, the Kia Sedona is a minivan. Like, are you prepared to have a bright orange one with a flash lightning bolt on the bonnet? I don't know.
They are making an Aquaman one.
I bet it'll be a convertible.
I don't know. I can see the Aquaman being the Kia Soul. That's that little sort of little box, you know, runabout. That'd look pretty good. Or maybe actually that one would look really good with some Batman-style ear fins off the back.
Oh, true.
Yeah, true. That'd be pretty cool. So I don't know what to make of that.
I mean, fun, but I think it's bizarre. And I think what I love about this article on Toy News International is the first person that commented on it said, theme vehicles, how about you just make a damn movie? That might be a good idea. And, you know, I think that's not a bad idea at all, really.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Although I'm really shaking in my boots about the inevitable Justice League movie, because you have to think that the Warner Brothers people are looking, you know, over at the Avengers movie and going, hey, we've got a team. We better do something about this. And I just fear it's going to be terrible.
But they did a great job with Green Lantern.
Well, there was actually a very good article. I know we're sort of digressing a little here, but I read a good article that was written about Warner Brothers' feeling towards costumes and the potential of all their future TV and movie endeavors being one that features superheroes but tries to move ever so slightly away from the costume element. You know, such a small deal. We didn't get Clark in the costume. And, of course, the upcoming series Arrow, he's not even called Green Arrow. He's actually referred to as Arrow. He has no costume. He has a hood. But that's really about it. So we have a guy who's not called by his real name, doesn't have the actual costume, and really the only similarity is that he carries a bow. So, you know, it sort of makes you fear for a Justice League film.
It makes you fear. But at least there'll be cars.
Well, that's right. You can see them all bundling into their Justice League minivan. And
that's right. Yeah, so be able to console yourself by, you know, driving around the cyborg mobile.
Yeah. Maybe they'll all head off down to Taco Bell because Warner Brothers will want to try and match shawarma scene. Something similar.
That's it. That's it for sure. I think you've nailed. I think we've written the movie basically.
That's right. Get this down.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be awesome. It'll be awesome. Okay, well, before we digress any further, I think we should wrap up the news, and we're going to come right back with the next installment of everybody's favorite podcast game, Name That. Well, now it is time for everybody's favorite podcast game, Name That. John, who is also known as Engineer Nerd from TVandFilmToys.com, runs a fantastic game at the AFB forum called Name That, and he's created a special audio version just for our podcast. So he's going to give us last week's answer and then a new clue. So over to you, John.
Well, thank you very much. You know, last week we played a little commercial sound, and it sounded a little something like...
Figures sold separately.
Location, Tibet. Assignment, recover stolen microchip. Protecting it was Super Ninja.
So, that was last week's sound. Did you guys have any guesses on that one?
No.
None.
What about you, Scott? Any guesses?
No.
No, I'm sorry. I have no idea.
Well, you guys are going to be kicking yourselves for this one. That was from a commercial for Chuck Norris and the Karate Commandos.
Of course.
That classic line.
Of course. Oh, my gosh. How could I have missed that?
Bless Chuck.
Yeah, that was one that I thought of, and I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder if they had commercials, and I ran off to go find one. So,
that's awesome.
I was really excited, yeah. So this week we'll do another little commercial sound, and it'll sound a bit like...
He's your wacky blue furry friend.
Chains can't hold me. Arr! Did I scare you?
Just squeeze here and he talks.
Hey, dude, what's up?
Lots of crazy phrases.
Give me a big kiss.
And we'll play it one more time.
He's your wacky blue furry friend.
Chains can't hold me. Arr! Did I scare you?
Just squeeze here and he talks.
Hey, dude, what's up?
Lots of crazy phrases.
Give me a big kiss.
And as always, come on over to the AFB forum and make some guesses. I really want you people to start guessing because, you know, it makes it more fun for me. And I like to see how many of you actually have knowledge of these vintage toy commercials and sounds out there. So come on over and, you know, prove your mental toughness over there. So join the forum and come on over and comment.
Mental toughness. I love
mental
it.
Mental toughness.
Mental toughness. All right, well, that wraps up another thrilling round of Name That. When we come back, we'll be talking about the new items that we've added to our collections.
Tired of losing battle after battle in the sky, the Autobots create the ultimate robot jet, Jetfire.
Transformers, more than meets the eye.
But the evil Decepticons have a secret new weapon, Shockwave.
The Transformers. Robots in disguise.
Get back to
the SD! Shockwave will stop
them! The Transformers
from Hasbro.
The whole reason that the show exists is because we are collectors, and so Feeding the Addiction is where we take a moment just to run through a list of things that we have either added to our collection or pre-ordered between this episode and the last. And, Ben, let's start with you. What new stuff have you got?
I've had a very good week this week. I was perusing Critical Mess, which is one of our brother forums, I guess. And there's a
That's very
a user
sexist on. Of you. It's one of our sibling forums.
Sibling forums, okay.
Okay. Okay.
Let's get it right. There was actually a user who's not a frequent member who put up a message saying they were selling their entire DC Universe Classics collection and was inviting people to sort of throw forth their wish lists. And so I began a bit of an exchange.
I threw forth
a user named Gitwer. And Gitwer and I exchanged a few messages, and I put together a pretty long list of stuff that I needed, because most of the stuff I'm still missing from DC Universe Classics was the more expensive items like Light Ray, and I'm still missing the Solomon Grundy, etc. And he turned out to be a very nice guy, and because I bought so many figures off him, he gave me a bit of a deal, gave me different postage options and said they were on their way. And I was a little bit nervous because it was about a month after he sent them and they hadn't turned up yet. And I was just thinking, a bit nervous, not familiar with this particular user. Maybe I'm expecting the worst. And sure enough, they turned up and they were very well packaged. And yeah, I filled in a lot of the holes in my collection. I didn't have people like the Silver Captain Atom. I was missing Batmite from the recently released Kmart exclusive Batman. And also, I didn't have a Clayface, but I've now got Grundy and Light Ray, and very, very pleased. Got them for a good price. They're in good condition. And yeah, quite thrilled. But the other thing that came through, which I'm really, really excited about and just couldn't be happier, is I'm a big fan of Bart Sees, comic book artist, and Bart's sort of a bit all over the place in the last few years. He hasn't sort of done anything sort of regular, I guess you'd say. He does the odd mini-series here or there. And I follow him on Facebook, and for some particular reason, he decided to do a bit of a marker sketch and put it up on Facebook, and I invited people to bid on it. And sure enough, someone bid on the marker sketch, and then Bart said, whoever wins the sketch can actually suggest the next character. And they did, and it went forward, and there was a few characters that I own some of Bart's original art, so I didn't have any overwhelming need to bid on a Batman. And I just happened to get on one particular day, and it was a Thor sketch. And there are certain artists that really are born to draw certain characters, and Bart's version of the Mighty Thor was pretty impressive, to say the least. And the good thing is Bart was actually finishing the auctions at midnight. And that was very fortunate for me, because that's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Australia. So I just sort of shifted my lunch to coincide with that. And I managed to win the Thor sketch. And I got an email from Bart's wife, Michelle, saying congratulations. And I responded and said, could Bart personalize it to me? And she said, absolutely not a problem. And I'm really, really thrilled.
That's fantastic.
That's a good sketch.
Yeah.
It is. I'm quite pleased.
Lovely. Lovely.
Yeah.
What about you, John?
Well, I actually won something this week, and I'm really kind of excited about it.
Cool.
I won a set of G.I. Joe Renegades Blu-rays.
Yay.
So,
nice.
Thanks to Shout Factory, the company that makes Blu-rays, and collector-actionfigures.com. They do like a action figure management online thing. So
they do.
Yeah.
And speaking of Dash, we're actually having Corey from Articulated Discussion and now Dash on the show in 2 weeks' time to talk about it.
Oh, well, that'll be great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, not about my winning Blu-rays, I hope, but hopefully.
Well,
about
actually,
Dash.
He does want to talk about that, but I think they're probably going to take them back.
Yeah. Okay. That
but
works.
Look, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, that's
fine. I will.
Anything else?
I also pick up a little Jack Skellington minifigure. If you're familiar with the Hellboy bust-ups, they were like these little mini statue figure things they had a while back where you'd put them together. So he's about probably – I haven't put him together yet. He's probably about 3 inches tall because he's so spindly. But he comes in a number of pre-painted pieces, has a little base. And it's just one of those little – box things you find next to the cash register at Target or wherever. So
can I be extra dumb and ask who Jack Skellington is?
Nightmare Before Christmas? Skeleton guy?
Tim Burton?
Yeah,
Batman.
I haven't seen the film. So, but look, thanks for your patience and understanding.
That's okay.
No problem.
Yeah. We would never mock anyone on this show for not having any knowledge about something.
No way. That's right. You know, there's the only stupid question is the one that you don't ask, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. I might just mute for a moment while I sob.
He's a pretty cool little figure. Matter of fact, he's cool enough that I'll probably have to go back and get a couple more of these. The nice thing is the bust ups when they did them, and they didn't do these. These are from Gen Planning, I think. But they actually, instead of being blind box, they actually tell you who's in them, so you don't have to buy a whole bunch and guess which one you're getting.
Oh, that's just crazy talk.
I know.
So what's the opposite of blind boxed?
The marked boxed?
Marked box, okay. Unblind.
Seeing eye box?
Braille blind box.
And in another episode of the AFB sensitivity lesson.
Now, is that all for you, John?
Yeah, I'm afraid to bring up any other pop culture references that you may not know and bring you to tears.
For heaven's sake. It's better to ask, because there's obviously going to be people out there listening who won't know either, and so just, you know, explain. I didn't think I would have anything to report this week. In fact, the last fortnight, because I wasn't on the show last week. But I made a trip yesterday to the wonderful All-Star Comics in Melbourne, and I picked up a statue which I didn't pre-order because I felt that I needed to see it in person, but I did end up buying it because they happened to have one in the store, and that is the next statue in the Batman Black and White series from DC Collectibles, which is the Dick Grayson as Batman, which is a really unusual statue because it's actually him in flight, basically. So it's an aerial kind of effect. Batman on a stand, like he's flying through the air, and it is awesome.
So it's not Batman falling to his death and being impaled on something.
No, that's the next version. No,
I thought it was Batman swimming underwater.
Well, that could be that too. I think it's because it's Dick Grayson, and he's got the circus background, etc. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that I saw. I liked the art and thought, you know what, I just don't want to see this in person because angles, statues and the way that they're photographed in terms of angles often can be very deceptive to the way that they actually come about. Now, I keep my Batman black and white displays actually on the top shelf of a Billy bookcase, and if I didn't have that there, this would have to go. It would be no good displayed kind of at below eye level, or even really at eye level, it's not great. It needs to be a little bit up so that you can see his face properly, because he is actually angled down a little bit more than what the solicit pictures show. But it's a fantastic piece. I love this line. And, this one's different because it's the Dick Grayson as Batman version. So sculpted by Jock, and a very nice addition at a very nice price at All Star. So thank you, All Star. Thank you, DC Collectibles. Thank you, Jock.
I like this much better than the Joker one.
Fine. You never had to buy the Joker one. You've got such issues, man.
I have to give DC Collectibles some credit here for sort of thinking outside the box. I think they've done a really good job on this.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a Robin, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's that whole kind of supporting cast they haven't tapped into yet, and I really hope that they do, because this is the one line that they seem to be persisting with pre-New 52 designs with. So hopefully there's a chance that we can get, I'd love a Huntress, a Batgirl, a few other of the supporting characters would be great, but I'm definitely enjoying it. But that is my sum total for this week. I've got my birthday coming up in a couple of weeks, so I should have some good swag to report then.
Cool.
How long have they been doing the black and white line?
Oh, golly. I would have to say, you know, a number of years, because it's been going, it went for a while before I picked any up. And yeah, I couldn't give you an exact, total. I will stick it into the Google machine and see if anything comes up, but.
You know, you were asking me last week, Ben, about being tempted by statues, and these are some of them that have always tempted me. Because you could get one, you know, and it, they're just very, I love the fact that they're black and white because it looks statuesque to me.
Yeah, and they're not just a series. I mean, it's the sort of thing that you could just pick the, if you have a particular sort of fondness for Jim Aparo, then you get the Jim Aparo version, put it on the shelf and enjoy it. You're not sort of obligated to get everything.
The first Batman Black and White statue came out in February of 2005.
Wow. That was a while ago.
Well, I mean, the series came out in the mid-90s, so it's been around a while.
Wow, there's a lot of them.
The comic book.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Hmm.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, unless anyone else has anything to report, it's time to award another red card to something out there in the toy universe.
What is this, Bizarro World?
Red carded is an opportunity to ask why for things out there in the toy universe, the things that maybe just don't make sense or just fail or confuse. And this is a combination of all of those this week. I clicked over on the Sideshow site just to check out what the exclusive was for the premium format Vision, which we have talked about previously. I'm not planning on ordering this because I'm trying to stick to the female Marvel premium formats only. But, you know, still it's interesting to look. And the exclusive for this premium format, I have to say, has really confused me. It is a switch-out portrait, which is, you know, the standard sort of exclusive. But it is a, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a disintegrating, melting robot Vision head.
That you can, that's a pretty good description.
That you can put in place of your normal Vision with bulging eyes and disintegrating skin and a big pink tongue poking out. And I really cannot get my head around why they chose this and who on earth would want it and want to display it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's revolting. I mean, I have no problems with horror. I have no problems with blood and guts or zombies or anything like that whatsoever. But I just don't get it. I think it just looks revolting. The bulging eyes in particular just remind me of the Evil Dead.
Well, I'm reminded of two things, once again. The first is he looks like a real Ghostbusters toy to me. You know, one of those things that you would flip the lever on the back, and it would, the head, because the head looks like it's popped up and opened up and, you know, the eyes have came out. The other thing it reminds me of is Clytus from the Flash Gordon movie. when he dies. You know, and his eyes roll out of the mask and the tongue comes out. That's what it looks like to me.
Maybe I'm missing some classic Vision reference here.
Oh, I think it's just sort of playing on that whole, you know, the whole Red Tornado gets the same treatment and, you know, destroyed every second storyline. I don't know what I would have taken in its place. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is take the exact same head but cast it in clear resin.
Yes.
To sort of give me, or not even clear resin, but as in a see-through resin.
Or even a swap-out arm that was, like, phasing. Would have been cool, but more than the head, really, like, because it's a bit weird. But just like, you know, take one of those arms and have it half phasing. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just, you know, normally the Sideshow exclusives, particularly the portraits, are spot on. You know, they're either another relevant version of the character, like, you know, Jim Lee, Psylocke, or whatever. And this just is perplexing.
Yeah.
Well, Google tells me that this is based on him right before She-Hulk rips him apart.
Oh.
In Avengers Disassembled.
Yeah, it's like a David Finch sort of ripoff.
But, I mean, she ripped him in half. She didn't...
Yeah, they've got a panel on this one website I'm looking at that shows his face melting like that, but...
Okay.
So you think you could maintain some sort of modicum of, you know, quiet relaxation while She-Hulk ripped you in half?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go. There you go. I don't get it. This is one that I think could ultimately tempt me because it is designed to go with the She-Hulk and they've got, you know, fairly small bases, so they look like they could be displayed together. But I certainly am not going to stress about getting the exclusive. That's for sure. And I really cannot imagine, you know, who is... Oh, there you go. I've seen volume 500. There you go. I've seen a reference pick. I still don't like it.
No, I mean, that's so obscure that I don't know.
I mean,
yeah, I like the idea of what you said. Probably a clear or some kind of translucent phased head would have been much cooler.
Yeah. And I guess Sideshow have done themselves a bit of a disservice because if you're not buying exclusive, then you're free to hunt around the web for a better price.
Exactly. I mean, particularly, you know, here in Australia, I'd wait till Pop Culture has a sale and order it from them and get a discount. Like, why not?
Yep.
All right. Sorry, go ahead.
The other thing Sideshow could have done probably that would have helped that is at least tell you where that reference was from.
Yes. But it still doesn't make any sense. It's dumb. I'm sorry. Well, Sideshow, I don't know if we've ever given Sideshow a red card before.
Well, now we have, and I hope they're listening.
That's right. I do too. Well, Sideshow, have a red card, and that's it. So we will be back in a moment with our feature discussion with Philip Reed.
The key to a new Transformers world is in your hands. Transformers Cybertron. New Cyber Planet keys unlock hidden powers. Optimus Prime launches an attack to battle the evil Megatron, but the giant Starscream has his own cyberplanet key and won't go down without a fight. Power Transformers Cybertron. Sold separately. Batteries not included. You can go to Transformers.com. Ask a parent first.
Well, tonight we're privileged to be joined by Philip J. Reed. Philip's known to the toy collecting community as an avid Transformers collector and owner of the long-running website Battlegrip.com. He's also just run a successful Kickstarter campaign for a book that will look at the world of unofficial Transformers toys and accessories called Transforming Collections. And Philip, we are really privileged to have you with us tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Fantastic.
Don't get enough time to talk to people, so I appreciate contacting me.
Great. Well, look, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and who you are in the collecting community for anyone who mightn't be aware.
For the collecting community, I run a website called Battlegrip.com. I started that in late 2008, and it focuses on whatever I'm currently obsessed about. And I have... I collect almost everything that I can find that interests me. So it's not that I say I'm only a Transformers fan or I'm only a Star Wars fan or I only collect designer toys. It's, does that look really cool?
Hmm.
So the site can be a bit random at times, and I know some people have been unhappy with that in the past. I've gotten some fairly angry emails about why am I wasting my time posting reviews about designer toys because nobody cares and blah, blah.
Oh.
But most people seem to really enjoy the randomness of the site and how... I mean, I've reviewed everything from a board game to Hot Wheels cars to wind-up robot toys from the 70s to brand-new action figures. I mean, I don't care. I'll review whatever I think is interesting.
Hmm. So you've got a fairly wide chase across pop culture and comics. You're not just focused on one particular set of characters or properties.
Right.
Yeah. Which I identify with. I'm pretty eclectic and undisciplined in my collecting interests as well. So, yeah, we get along just fine.
Cool.
I don't see why that would actually be such an issue to some people. I would have thought that that's a great way to be exposed to new and interesting things.
Some people don't seem to want to be exposed to something new. They want to see the 105th review of a DC Universe Classics figure that is the exact same toy you've seen before, except, hey, look, new gloves and a new mask.
Yes, yeah. But, I mean, so, you know, many collectors can be focused on just one thing, which I envy sometimes because I think I'd probably be slightly richer and have a little bit more spare time if I could just collect one particular thing. But not all collectors are built like that.
I think I would have less fun if I only focused on one thing.
So what are the main things that you're collecting at the moment?
Well, right now I'm picking up a lot of third-party Transformers toys that I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think that's been the main focus for the last month since I launched the Kickstarter project. And then about the month before that, I was just in the store earlier this morning looking around to see what was new. And there was really nothing new on the shelves, which is odd because Christmas is coming up.
Mm.
But I'm trying to think what I've picked up recently. Other than the unofficial Transformers toys, there have been a lot of Hot Wheels lately.
There's cool ones out there
like,
right now.
I like how you mentioned Hot Wheels and everybody just like shuts up.
They're expensive now. Some of those like, you know, real nice ones, you know. I was looking at the Hong Kong Fui one. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then it was like $4. I'm like, for that?
Well, the reason those are so much more expensive than the basic ones is they use real rubber tires. They use more metal in the construction. They're overall higher quality toy cars, which if you don't actually open one and investigate it, you're never going to know that. So I'm sure parents see those $5 ones and then the 99 cents or $1.09 these days basic, and they can't figure out why would I spend $5 on that.
I'm sure.
I would think parents in Australia would be thrilled to see a $5 Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
I'm sorry our economy is so bad.
Well, the thing that, you know, we found over here, and this is getting off track as we do, but, you know, our dollar is stronger than the US dollar at the moment. But
yes,
our prices, you know, at retail have not come down at all in terms of these sort of things.
Yeah, I think that's happening in Canada too, where the Canadian dollar is stronger than the US dollar, but they're not really getting any benefit out of that.
Mm. Mm. Yes, well, I mean, I won't get on my soapbox, but I just had to
laugh. There's not enough room for all of us up there.
No, well, I knew when John was saying, you know, they're really expensive, I knew he was going to come out with something that would sound ridiculously inexpensive to us.
That's right. So, Philip, you mentioned that you collect a lot of different properties, but within a specific property, do you collect sideways? So, for example, if there's an action figure license that you collect, do you go for statues, you know, bobbleheads, sort of the whole range?
I would say I'm not a bobblehead fan, but then I would look up at my shelf and I'd be lying to you. I never realized I was a bobblehead fan. But okay, so I'm sitting in my living room and I've got two walls of floor-to-ceiling shelving. It's a total of about 29 linear feet going from the floor up to 8.5-foot ceilings. So what I can see around me are statues, a life-size Iron Man helmet, action Excellent. Figures, way too many busts, a lot more statues than I expected. Wow. A whole bank of bobbleheads that if my house was to shake, the shelf would just bobble away. I mean, basically, if I think it looks cool and I can afford it, I usually grab it.
Why not?
I know you have a couple of the things that I'd love to have, and that's you have the Super 7 Stormtrooper.
Yes, right. That's incredible. Stormtroopers are actually one of my weaknesses. I have a lot of Stormtroopers.
and that is a cool piece. That is a very cool piece. I was very jealous that you got that.
That's a very cool piece. And now they're releasing Boba Fett, and they're doing Transformers for the Super Shogun series.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. That's cool.
Yeah, Optimus Prime is going to be done. So they're doing a robot toy of a robot.
Fancy that.
Wow.
Basically, they're going to take my money again.
Yeah, that happens. So speaking of Transformers, the way that this chat came about was obviously on the back of your successful Kickstarter campaign for your book. So before we get to the Kickstarter, just talk to us a bit about what it is about Transformers that captures your imagination as a collector.
I think it's the engineering of the toys. Now, for me, I'm more of a fan of the type of Transformers that I can pick up, and while I'm in a conference call or meeting or something, I can transform it without having to stare at it a lot and go, wait, what just happened? I'm not a fan of the super complex, intricate transformations. I'm a fan of the... Well, see, I'm a fan of a Transformers toy that I can throw in my pocket, not worry about something breaking or getting out of alignment, and just absent-mindedly play with and transform while I'm walking around. That's the toys, but in terms of the property, I mean, I was a kid when the cartoon and comics came out, so I was a huge fan of that, had toys, and I've just still to this day read comics, watched various cartoons. It's... The stories a lot of time help keep me excited about it, but it's the toys that I keep going back to.
Do you have a particular focus, you think? I mean, are you a G1 guy? Or are you Beast Wars? Or is it just all across the Transformers universe?
I don't know what focus means. No, okay. there's definitely no focus at all. A few days ago, I just got back from the Dallas Fall Toy Preview. And while I was in Dallas, I went to a place called the Dallas Vintage Toy Store that if you're ever in Dallas, you must go to. The trick is take as much cash as you're willing to spend. And if you have any credit cards at all, leave them about 6 states away. While I was there, I grabbed some old Transformers throttle bots because I've decided I'm going to go ahead and just grab all those. I grabbed a GoBots command center because
Cool.
And it's pretty neat. I got a GoBots book and a GoBots lunchbox and thermos. It's a very cool toy store, and it's a lot of fun to go and look around. And what's neat is it's in an office building. Like, the first floor is a bank.
Oh, wow.
So you go in and you go up to the 6th floor, and it's just this office door. It's locked. You got to ring the bell. Somebody will let you in. It actually reminds me a lot of one of my favorite toy stores in Hong Kong, which is in an office building and kind of hidden. If you don't know it's there, you're never going to find it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those can be the best kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite common in Hong Kong.
Yeah. That's one of the neat things about Hong Kong is they don't really have shopping malls the way we think of them in the U.S. Mm. They just – there's so many people. They just stack everything on top of everything. Huh. So you go into an office building and you might find – like my wife and I went to Hong Kong last year for vacation, and one of the places she wanted to go was a horseback riding store. She wanted to get some stuff, and she had the address – and we found it on like the 18th floor of a building in Kowloon, like hidden away.
Wow.
It's neat.
It is. It's a very frustrating city to walk around, both Kowloon and Hong Kong, because you can come across a small entrance to what appears to be a small arcade, but then you walk in and it suddenly expands out to be this 10-story super arcade, and you have to traverse the entire... the entire path, because you just don't know what you could be missing.
Singapore is quite similar. I made a an amazing discovery on a final day of a trip to Singapore where I was hot, as you are, and I was just desperate for something to drink and walked into this very nondescript-looking building called China Square, and it turned out to be three stories of all toy stores.
And I have never been to Singapore, but I really want to go.
Oh,
so look, maybe someday. Yeah,
it's an amazing place, but you know, that place, it was just such a fluke. I actually rang my wife and said, "I don't think I'm coming home." I'm pretty sure. I'm not just talking toy stores like Toys R Us. I'm talking three floors of action figures and statue and Transformer type stores.
I understand.
Yeah, look, yes. You know, unbelievable. I just said, I think I found heaven. I don't think I'll be back for a while. Very cool.
Yeah, I've heard about a toy store. I think it's in Shenzhen in China. That's like a 10-floor just giant toy flea market and clearance house, basically. And someday I'm going to get there. I know I've got to go back over to Hong Kong and southern China in the spring, so maybe I'll get to take a couple days vacation time around Shenzhen and just get lost in there. And I don't know. I'll take a backpack with like water and food and stuff and camp out. It'll be great.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk about your Kickstarter, because this has obviously been a pretty exciting thing to follow just as a internet user, but it's obviously been much more exciting for you. Tell us a bit about the book and how the idea of making it a Kickstarter came about.
Okay. So last year around the holidays, I was having a party here at home and a bunch of friends were over. And as often happens, we started looking through the collection. And people kept gravitating toward a bunch of the unofficial third-party Transformers toys, and they'd be like, okay, what is this? And we'd get into this big, long discussion about it. And it was around that time I figured out I really want a book that kind of introduces people to this area, this field, so that I can just hand the book to people. And as time went on, I wasn't sure if there was enough demand for the book to actually go ahead and make it. So I decided I'd run a Kickstarter project. I mean, we had run a Kickstarter project at the office, and it had gone very well. I'd learned a lot about how Kickstarter worked. So I put together a plan, launched the Kickstarter project, and fortunately there was enough interest in it that now I'm going to make a book.
So sorry, go ahead, John.
Oh, sorry. Just for people that aren't real Transformer savvy, could you kind of maybe give a little background on third-party Transformer stuff? I know there's a lot out there, but just for the people that aren't familiar with it.
Okay, so the idea is Hasbro and Takara own Transformers and make toys. Some fans are not entirely happy with the toys that Hasbro and Takara makes, so they create, basically, it's kind of like the auto industry with aftermarket add-ons. So they create a kit that's, hey, here's a cartoon-accurate gun and head. So get your screwdriver out, take the head off, put this new head on, you're good to go.
Huh.
That's like the low end. And then there's other people who say, you know what? I really like Constructicons and Devastator. Hasbro hasn't made a Devastator that I like, so I'm making a full-size, completely original Transformers-inspired Constructicons set.
Huh.
They are not – and they range from like kind of inspired by the design, but you look at it and it's like, okay, that's a green dump truck that turns into a robot that then merges with other green construction vehicles to make a giant robot. But none of them are exactly identical to official Transformers. So you've got that end, which is pretty exciting. That's where some of the cooler stuff's happening right now. But then you go all the way to, I just made a Generation 1 Volkswagen Bug Bumblebee, and the package says Transformers and says Bumblebee right on it. It's a completely new mold. Somebody just released one. It's up for pre-order that is called Bumblebee, and it looks like the 1984-85 cartoon design. but it takes the official Hasbro 2006 Classics Bumblebee transformation pattern, and instead of the Hasbro, we created our own kind of little yellow car design because we couldn't get a Volkswagen license. So instead of that, they said, we're not asking anybody for a license. We're just making a VW Bug.
Huh. What's Hasbro's take on all of this? You know, is it a, like, it's unlicensed, obviously, but do they care? Or
I don't know what the official Hasbro stance is because they haven't really discussed it much. Takara, a bit over a year ago, came out and said, we're going to put an end to this, but I haven't really seen any action. That doesn't mean they haven't done anything. It's probably just all behind the scenes, and it's probably all legal work with cease and desist letters and whatever else. And the only big thing I know that's come up with Hasbro is this year at the Transformers BotCon, the official Transformers convention, they did not allow people to sell these unlicensed toys.
Yeah, I heard the backroom trading on stuff was a little heavy on that kind of thing.
It was awesome. There were after hours, like go up to somebody's hotel room and it's like, hey, I just set up a store in my hotel room. Let's shop. I may have spent more in people's hotel rooms than in the dealer hall, and that sounds really bad, but I was just buying toys, I swear. My wife was with me. We were just buying toys. It was all good.
So, Philip, when you talk about sort of unofficial Transformers, that you're obviously sort of talking about custom pieces specifically for customizers to modify existing toys to be more accurate, et cetera. But do you also cover things like when a company in South America gets hold of some old molds and you know, they bring out some unlicensed, you know, lost Transformadores, and they bring a pink bumblebee.
Transformadores.
No, I'm trying not to cover bootleg toys, though I've had a lot of people ask when I'm going to run a Kickstarter project for a book about bootleg Transformers toys. So I'm like, let's get this one book done and in everybody's hands and make sure everybody's happy with it before we start talking about more books. But, you know, I would buy a book focused on bootleg Transformers toys because it would be funny. Because, yeah, it'd be like the whole rainbow of the Bumblebee mold.
Yes.
Bumblebee Rainbow would be a pretty good title. I think I'd switch it and make it Rainbow Bumblebee.
I can actually remember many years ago here in Australia, we have the usual $2 stores, those sort of cheap stores, and there was a series of Star Wars figures called Galaxy Heroes, and they were $2. They were just normal size. They were made from the original sort of Kenner molds, and okay. I remember looking at Chewbacca, and he was kind of a lavender, purpley lavender color, and for $2 I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever seen, and I passed on those, and of course they ended up doing very, very well on the secondary market.
And yeah, well, because somebody else around 10 years ago or so, maybe more, took the 1995 Kenner Hasbro Star Wars figures and did upsized versions, I think like 7, 8, 9 inches, somewhere in that area. So it's this big, really ugly looking stormtrooper that's the same sculpt, basically. It's just upsized.
Yeah, if you ever want to be amused, type in Polish bootleg Star Wars figures and do an image search on that. And there's quite a few out there that are amusing.
Are they the ones
for sure.
Did like the blue stormtrooper and like red Darth Vader and stuff like that?
Yeah, a lot of that comes from there.
Polish.
I would buy that book too.
Yeah, I would too.
It's hilarious.
But yeah, the bootlegs are totally different from what most of these third-party Transformers manufacturers doing. Like a company called TFC Toys released a series called Hercules, and that's their Transformers Devastator homage, I think is the word they would rather you use than ripoff. But anyway, it's incredible. There are these big, bulky, blocky construction vehicles that turn into robots. The plastic's amazing. The engineering is really cool. I mean, it makes me feel bad to say it, but I think they made better Transformers toys than Hasbro makes.
You know, it's kind of weird because you'd think if somebody's going to make third-party stuff, they'd pick something easy, and Transformers doesn't seem like the most easy thing to go re-engineer to me.
No, I keep expecting a big Masters of the Universe third-party scene to pop up.
Hmm. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Look, it is, I think it's an interesting take that I'm really interested in just the focus of the book. It's not just an overview of a toy line, but, you know, looking specifically at the unofficial stuff. Has anything else like this ever been done for any other toy line?
Oh, like a book? Do you mean a book or whole scene?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's that sort of unofficial side that, because obviously there's been, you know, there's lots of sites and things that chronicle the history of a particular toy line, etc. But just focusing on the unofficial side sounds really interesting and unusual to me.
Well, in terms of toys, if you go back to the 80s, you've got the whole, like, Remco Galaxy Warriors for use with Masters of the Universe series.
Yep.
G.I. Joe, you've got the Leonard Toys core series that's been around, I think, since Hasbro made 3¾-inch G.I. Joe toys in 82.
Huh. Sounds about right.
In terms of a book, I don't know. I don't own any books like that, but if they exist, I hope somebody tells me so I can go find them.
Hmm. But obviously the success of the Kickstarter just shows that, you know, there is such an interest in this aspect of this particular toy line that people don't just want the toys, they want to read about it as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, and I've had several people contact me since the Kickstarter project closed saying, oh, I just found out about this, how can I get a book? So, So the Kickstarter project, I had some stretch goals. The way Kickstarter works is you set a monetary goal, and if the project meets that goal, then you get the money and you create whatever you've promised and ship it out to people. But then as Kickstarter's evolved and gotten bigger, it's created its own basically terminology and ideas, concepts. So there's the idea of stretch goals, which are goals that a project sets beyond the original monetary goal. So, for example, my goal may be $5. If I reach a $5 goal, I will post a video on the internet telling everybody how stupid I am.
Most people do that for free.
Yeah, but I need at least $5 to make that worth my time.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, and then I would set a stretch goal for $10, for example, which is, and to help demonstrate how stupid I am, I will do this video while running down an escalator, like down the upside of an escalator. But those are stupid examples, and I would need at least $15 to do that one. So what I did was I had stretch goals for the book that made the book bigger, added pages. I had a stretch goal where it would be upgraded to hardcover, and where it closed out, the book is 28 pages, saddle stitched, full color, 7.5-inch square. So I really want a hardcover.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do it.
Wow.
I ran the numbers, I did some crunching, and, you know, it's worth it to me to spend some money to get the book in hardcover. So yesterday I announced that the book was upgrading to 7.5-inch square, 40-page hardcover.
Wonderful.
Oh, wow.
And then yesterday afternoon, while trading some emails with the printer, they were like, well, you know, for this, if you run like 100 more copies than you plan, we can give you 48-page, 8-inch by 8-inch hardcover. So I'm going to do that.
Wow.
We're going to make the book bigger. So, yeah, so we're going to go 20 pages over what the project commitment was, because I have a lot of things I want to share with people.
So how does Kickstarter work in terms of, you know, when you get the money and how they hold you accountable to actually delivering on what it is that people have donated for?
So getting the money is easy. Before you can run a Kickstarter project, you have to be set up with an Amazon Payments account, because Kickstarter runs all their money processing, credit cards, whatever, through Amazon. And once you're all set up, then you run the project. If it's successful, then like the second the project closes, Amazon starts processing these credit cards, and what you get is every day an updated notice of X number of dollars have cleared and are now in your account. Kickstarter takes 5% of whatever you make. That's their cut. And then Amazon takes a variable percentage based on type of card use, things like this. But it's effectively, in the end, 10% of whatever you make through Kickstarter goes to Amazon and Kickstarter fees.
Okay.
So getting the money is easy, because once it's all in your account, or at any point you want, there's money in your account, you can just transfer it to your bank account from the Amazon account.
Okay.
That's all easy. The holding people to the commitment side is one area that I think Kickstarter needs to do some work on, because I've backed, it's over 70 projects.
Hmm.
And I've maybe received 20 of the things that I backed.
Ooh.
Wow.
And that's a bad example, because I've backed some that when I looked at it, I thought, you know, that's a pretty ambitious goal. It would be like somebody posting a Kickstarter project to say, I don't like any of the cars on the market. I've never designed a car in my life. I don't know anybody who's ever designed a car. I don't even know where to go to look to buy tires, but I'm going to run a Kickstarter project to design a car. And then somehow it funds, and the guy's got millions and millions of dollars, and he's going, I got millions and millions of dollars. I'm going to design a car. And he burns through all his money trying to figure out, does a car have four wheels or six wheels? But so the projects I've backed where it's not by somebody with experience have not gone all that well at times. So for Kickstarter, I've started now, I pretty much only back projects where the people behind it are demonstrating they know what they're doing. Like Phil Tippett, I think I got his name right. I could be wrong. Movie effects guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Master of stop motion work. Ran a Kickstarter project earlier this year to create a movie, a stop motion movie.
Wow. That
he'd been working on since the 80s, and he had shelved once CG, like computer effects, came into like really just dominate the industry. And he's like, well, nobody wants stop motion anymore. And in the Kickstarter video, in the project, he explained how people would see the stuff that he had worked on so far, like new people to the film industry who were computer effects experts, and they were like, no, we want to learn stop motion. So he ran a Kickstarter project to finish this film. And I totally backed that one, because that's obviously someone who has demonstrated he has experience in what he's doing.
Yeah, and I understand.
It looked amazing, and at the moment the film is expected. I should get my DVD sometime in December if things go well.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. That's a cool one. I didn't know that one.
Yeah, it's called Mad God.
So, Philip, you mentioned that you've had quite a few people contact you after the Kickstarter project finished, saying that they actually wanted to be part of that. So is that actually a possibility? Will you have additional copies of the book for sale?
Yeah, I'm going to have some extra copies. It looks like probably 100 copies is what I'll have over the needs for the Kickstarter project. Oh, that's all related to some talks I had with the printer, and they're like, you know, if you run some more copies, you can go to 8-inch by 8-inch and 48 pages, and the cost is not that bad, by which they mean I'll get to keep my other foot to hop around on. But
so I don't think it will make
a much better book, and with those like I added 20 pages total over what the commitment was, because I just there's a lot I want in this book, and I want to have an awesome book on my shelf. I mean, if you guys want, you can rip 20 pages out so you can go back to what I promised. I'm keeping my 20 pages.
This isn't what I paid for.
I actually had somebody send me a message on Twitter angry that I made the book hardcover and added pages.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, here's where it is. He was mad because he did not back the project, because he decided that his backing wasn't going to push it to the goal to get a hardcover. I'm sorry if somebody is upset that the book is going to be better than I promised.
So
I don't feel too bad about it. No. Because.
So how will people who didn't back the project be able to buy a copy?
I'm thinking, well, there's two retailers who backed the project at a level to get 10 copies of the book to sell on their site. So there's 20 copies. And then I'm going to be sitting on about 100 copies of the book that I'll either make a fort or sell.
You won't have any problem at all.
Making a fort?
No, I forts. I think once it's out, I think it'll be snapped up pretty quick. I was watching the Twitter response, because when you put the Kickstarter up, my Twitter started just lighting up with just everybody talking about it. So I was really impressed by the buzz you were getting.
So am I. That's cool.
Well, I mean, I think it's exciting, you know, even for someone like, you know, for myself, I am not a Transformers collector, but I'm very interested in the book because it's just so unusual. And, you know, it's such an interesting thing. If it was just a retrospective of the toy line, I'd probably say, oh, well, that's not for me. But because of the focus that you've taken, like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of just retrospectives of the toy line. And I'm not trying to say there shouldn't be more, because I'll buy them. But no, I wasn't after that. Like, I had a couple of people think that what I was trying to do was create a basically encyclopedia of all these toys. And no, it is not a complete every unofficial toy ever made or anything like that. It's specifically intended to be an introduction to this industry, because I think there's a lot more people out there who are interested in it than we realize. And I see this industry growing. There's faster sellouts. The products are getting better. And now to me felt like a good time for an introduction to it as it's on a upswing, as it's growing.
Yeah, I think you really hit it, because you know it's that unofficial, but there's just so much of it. There's no other toy line that has this community behind it, and it's strange, and it needs to be documented. So good for you for doing that.
Well, thank you.
So has the success, that sort of overwhelming success that you've had with this Kickstarter project, has that sort of ignited your passion to do future projects, something similar?
Possibly. I've had a few ideas. I have an insane idea for a Kickstarter project that when I crunched the numbers, I figured, you know, I'd probably have to set a $25,000 goal.
Ooh, wow.
Like I said, an insane idea, because it involves 2-week-long trips to Hong Kong at different times. Because I love toy shopping in Hong Kong. There are shops everywhere.
Yep.
And so many things you can buy. So I thought it would be really cool to run a project to create a basically tourist guide to toy shopping in Hong Kong.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, that would be cool.
Where I spend a week in Hong Kong going to shops, mapping everything out, taking a bunch of photos, And then I come home for a few months and put together everything I've got, figure out, okay, what am I missing? And then go back for another week and do it again to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I would totally buy that book.
Yeah.
Now, as we start to wrap up, first of all, we've had an extra guest star this evening. You've obviously got a feathered friend there with you. Is
it? Oh, yes. That would be Gracie and Lemony.
Oh, there's two of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Gracie's the really talkative one, and he's actually not that close to me. He's just very, very loud sometimes.
And what kind of birds are they?
Cockatiels.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, we've loved having them on the show, but we're not tripling your fee for them. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm very, very sorry for his noise. He's being louder than usual.
Somehow they know, don't they? It's like, hey, I'm not the center of attention here.
Yeah. Now, I thought you were going to mention the incredibly loud clicking noise of me transforming a toy in my hands. Lots of ratchet joints.
And, oh, that was obviously overshadowed by the bird noise.
Okay.
Yeah. If people want to find out more about you and your project, where do they go on the internet to do that?
Twitter's the fastest way to reach me if anybody has questions, and that's Philip J. Reed is my Twitter account.
Okay, and that's R-E-E-D.
Yes.
Okay, two E's.
And one L. One L in Philip.
Yep. Excellent.
And then the other place is you can just check the battlegrip.com site.
Which is an awesome site that everybody should be checking out anyway on a daily basis.
Thank you. That's well, right. Maybe not this week since I was in Dallas all week for work and I didn't update as much as I like to. Huh. But... and the other place to find me online is at work. I am chief operating officer at Steve Jackson Games, and you can check sjgames.com.
Wonderful. So tell us just a little bit about that, because I leading up till today, I actually thought from your Twitter tag where it said game designer that must have meant video games, but it doesn't, does it?
No. Steve Jackson Games is a tabletop board and card game role-playing game company that was founded in 1980. And over the years, the company's made Car Wars, Ogre, GURPS. We make a game called Munchkin that you can find just about anywhere.
Yeah, that's actually based on, is it John Kovalich?
John Kovalich?
Kovalich, okay.
Yes, yeah. Kovalich. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Dork Tower.
John's a really great guy. Yeah, I created some Dork Tower covers with John over the years, some of the old comics.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, one of them actually won an award. It was fun.
Oh, wow, that's handy.
That's fantastic. Well, look, Philip, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us. And I'm sure that for both people that do have a strong interest in Transformers and for those that may be sitting outside that, you know, we've all gotten something out of just hearing your journey. And we wish you all the best with the rest of this project. And we look forward to seeing the outcome of it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah. I think I'm on track to deliver books to everybody in December. That's probably funny. a week later than originally planned, because the hardcover takes about a week longer to print. But I think everybody will be happy to wait that week to get the hardcover and more pages.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
From across the galaxy to battle the evil Decepticons comes the ultimate Autobot hero, Optimus Prime. Transforming from big rig into powerful robot, he's the greatest Autobot warrior of them all. With a hidden battle platform, twin rocket launchers for double the damage, and a light and sound power pack for real battle action. And when Optimus talks,
I am Optimus Prime,
the Decepticons will run for cover.
Transformers!
Transformers Generation 2. Optimus Prime is all you see here.
Well, before we finish off, we have a little bit of feedback. And if you have some feedback for us, we would love to receive it. If you want to email podcast@actionfigureblues.com, you might just hear us read it out.
I'm going to read out our feedback this week. It actually comes from our Firestorm toy retrospective in episode 31, and it is from the Irredeemable Shag. Now, if you are a Firestorm fan, then you probably know firestormfan.com, and that is Shag's website. And he's also the host of the Fire, co-host of the Fire and Water podcast, which is a Firestorm and Aquaman podcast. And he says, "Hey guys, Shag here. I just wanted to say what a great job y'all did on your Firestorm action figure retrospective. I was really impressed with your thorough coverage. I agree with many of the comments Eli made about the various figures and completely agree that the JLA Series 2 Firestorm from 2004 is the best figure by far." And then he also has given us a stack of information, which I can't read out all of, but just a bit of an overview of some things that we commented on. One thing that we could talk about was the insignia and the different ways that it's represented on these figures. And he did say that it's actually meant to be an atomic symbol. The big red circle that looks like a sun represents the nucleus. And while the white lines represent the electron pairs around the nucleus, with the smarter red dots representing the electrons themselves, sorry, smaller red dots, he believes the error with the fourth electron on the DC Direct version that we talked about started with a comic book drawing and has oozed into several places since, although he can't identify the exact drawing at the moment. He also mentions that one thing that we didn't talk about was the Firestorm McDonald's Happy Meal toy from the Batman Brave and the Bold line. And there's a photo of this, which I'll pop in the Enhanced podcast. And he also just mentions that we talked about Firestorm Heroclix, but there have actually been six different Heroclix versions of Firestorm. So there you go. And finally, he says, again, great job on the Firestorm retrospective. I really enjoyed the podcast. Keep up the nice work. Sincerely, the Irredeemable Shag from firestormfan.com and the Fire and Water podcast.
Cool.
Yay.
Yeah, cool.
So thank you very much for that, Shag. Greatly appreciated. And with that, we are at the end of the show. I hope that you've enjoyed listening, and if you would like to hear more, you can go to actionfigureblues.com, click on the podcast tab, and listen to some of our previous episodes, or you can also subscribe at iTunes, and of course, if you do go to iTunes, we would love it if you took the time to leave us a positive rating and review. While you're at our site, you might like to check out the reviews and articles there, and perhaps visit some of our sponsors, like Mike's Comics and Stuff, Big Bad Toy Store, and PopCulture.com, who help keep the site running. Now, we all do hang out at the Action Figure Blues Forum, which is afbforum.com. And if you would like to have a look there, you'll find me posting as Scotty, Ben posting as Fish Milkshake, and John posting as Engineer Nerd. And we would love you to come and join in the discussion at the forum. And finally, we would love some suggestions from you about things that we might like to cover in news or red carded or our discussion topics. And you can email us at podcast@actionfigureblues.com to give us some ideas if you like. You can also follow us on Twitter at AFBlues and like the Action Figure Blues page on Facebook at facebook.com/ActionFigureBlues. And with that, we are done.
Done.
Whew.
Phew. Good job, and huge thanks to Phil Reed for being on the show and chatting to us. Greatly appreciated. Looking forward to some more guests coming up in future episodes. And now we say goodnight.
Not to Argentina, but no. Goodnight anyway.
Oh, that's right. I have been feeling a bit guilty about, you know, singling out one country. So maybe I should, you know, goodnight Ethiopia. How does that go?
Good night, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, the two of you that have internet there. Stop killing each other.
Good night, Canada, eh?
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Night. Bye.
Hey.
Badass.
Woo! Okay, John, we're charging you with the and.
Okay.
So we're trusting you with the
Was last week's and okay or
it was sufficient. It was sufficient. I didn't have to, you know, edit in any previous ands that I had directed.
A file and.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a totally adequate and. You are listening to the Action Figure Blues podcast, episode number 33, brought to you by actionfigureblues.com. I'm Scott, and with me tonight are...
Ben.
And John.
Here's Johnny! That had lots of enthusiasm. I loved it.
33 episodes, and I still don't think we can get through the intro. It's like three sentences.
I'll go first. Why not?
I thought we already had this settled.
No, we had that Ben was going last settled.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything else that you would like to nitpick before we move on?
I've got a list here.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, last week we played a little commercial sound, and it sounded a little something like this.
Oh, sorry, I belched in before you said the this. Well, I'll just edit out the this.
Yeah, you could do that.
Sorry. That's fine.
So we were looking for microchips in Tibet, if you were trying to remember.
I'm sorry, I just can't believe it. You said, and it sounds like this, and then Scott belches. I mean, honestly. I'm sorry.
I knew there was an edit coming, so I just, you know, thought I would remember to edit that out.
Take him anywhere but out.
I know.
We never had any issues with the end until John came along.